I had a really interesting conversation with one of our surgeons who said that as a surgeon, he ends up doing a lot of problem solving, but he doesn't understand all of the other implications when things break down. How is everybody impacted when a problem arises? Because usually what he ends up doing is he's trying to solve a problem, but he has limited information on all of those other factors. So he's trying to use an approach that might not necessarily be the most current and best approach.
Millions of patients undergo surgical procedures every single day. They place their lives in the hands of healthcare providers who are committed to delivering safe, functional, and sterile instrumentation for every surgery. Working behind the scenes are the technicians who go largely unknown, even to the patients whose lives are so dramatically impacted by their work. This is Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing. Join us as we explore this hidden world and introduce you to the unsung heroes who are driving the advancement of our profession. And now your hosts, Justin Poulin, Michael Matthews, and Hank Balch.
This week on Beyond Clean, we kick off season 3 with Lisa Wakeman, who is the Sterile Processing Education and Quality Coordinator for the Indianapolis Suburban Region of IU Health Network. Lisa graduated with a Bachelor's of Science in Integrative Leadership and an MBA from Anderson University. She also holds a certification as a Myers-Briggs practitioner specializing in interpersonal communication. Lisa serves as Director of Education for Circle of Care, an organization devoted to reducing healthcare-acquired infections through increased awareness and collaborative interdisciplinary education, particularly in the realm of perioperative services. She's also very active and holds memberships with ISHM, AMI, AORN, SGNA, and APIC, staying current on activities and publications for those organizations. She's served on several projects as a subject matter expert for ISHM, including writing workshops for both creating and revising questions for the international certification exams. Lisa serves as a volunteer with AMI in the Mentor Program, editor of peer-reviewed articles, and is a committee member on 7 AMI standards boards related to the sterile processing profession. She represents sterile processing as a strategic alliance liaison for her local APIC chapter, and she serves as a committee chair for the Central Indiana chapter of ISHM. It's no hard to see why, as a healthcare professional, she is driven to influence positive change for patient safety initiatives, and Lisa is a catalyst for the advancement of infection prevention within sterile processing. I'm very excited to talk to Lisa today, gentlemen, especially as we kick off season 3. And Lisa was recently speaking out at a big event that I worked with a great guest of ours, our only 2-time guest, I think, still to this date, in Sean Flynn out at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, Stanford. And she did an amazing job on point-of-use cleaning, gave a lot of tools to the people who were attending, and I thought she really needs to come on the show and talk about this as well, especially because of the process that they went through at IU Health to put all that information together and really get it out to the entire organization. So looking forward to speaking with Lisa.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and to directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's
2023, and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for off-site sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Joining us now is Lisa Wakeman, Sterile Processing Education and Quality Coordinator for the Indianapolis Suburban Region of IU Health Network. Lisa, we're happy to have you on the show, and we're going to be talking about point of use, something that I saw you speak at Sean Flynn's conference out in Stanford. It was a great event. It was great to have you there, and I know we both had a chance to present to quite an engaging audience, but you did a lot of good work that you shared with that audience, and I'm hoping you'll be able to present that to our listeners today.
I'm so glad to be on the show with you guys today. Thanks for inviting me.
Let me kick it off with point of use cleaning. It's often misunderstood, and a lot of times people think, oh, it's just throwing that pre-soak enzymatic detergent or the foam or the gel after the case is over. But obviously, it's much more comprehensive than that. And maybe you should just define point of use and give everybody the parameters of just how expansive it is, according to a lot of recommendations and industry guidelines.
You know, point of use cleaning is comprehensive, but it's not complicated. All it is removing gross soil before it has a chance to get hard on the surface. So whether it's flushing a lumen, brushing a channel, or wiping the surface of an instrument, it's really that simple.
And so, Lisa, this whole conversation is not a new conversation when it comes to point of use cleaning, but obviously there's a lot of increased emphasis on it here recently. And I know some of that, we see that emphasis coming out in various news articles, but can you speak to what is prompting this renewed interest and focus on this topic in particular?
I really think there's significant evidence that there's been a problem for a very long time. However, increasing media attention of dirty instruments making it to the field has brought a greater emphasis on addressing the issues. There are many factors that contribute to this problem, such as inconsistencies to manufacturers' IFUs and lack of adequate tools, such as visual inspection aids and lack of consistent education and support. I think that the biggest thing that's made a difference is people are starting to understand that it's everybody's problem. It's not just our hospital or the hospital down the street. This is happening everywhere.
That's a great point, and I'll tell you, kind of a nerd when it comes to these news stories that hit, and I'm always trying to dig in behind the headline. Obviously, that's what pulls the readers in, and there's a short article, but I'm trying to read between the lines to say, yeah, what was the issue? What prompted this? And oftentimes, it could be many months later, the actual CMS report will come out. It will show exactly what you're talking about. Yes, there's multiple quality issues, but 90% of these recent big quality things that hit the news, it comes back to at least one particular finding around this whole point of use question. And a great example, if folks want to look up the big Detroit medical one, you can see in their CMS report that many observations for either a lack of or inconsistent point of use cleaning in their ORs, down through that whole process. So, yeah, you're totally right. And it's not just the media, obviously. It's these accreditation organizations such as Joint Commission now who have seen that media and caught that emphasis like what you reference. Now they're bringing to bear their own focus, which obviously that has a tendency to light a fire under folks to get, you know, collaboration and focus and resources into fixing this problem. And yes, you know, to going to that, I did want to ask, what are some of the risks then for point of use cleaning practices? So what can happen if we start to drop the ball on this process?
So we know that biofilms are created when they're allowed to sit on the surface of the instrument for a long period of time. And that causes corrosion, which can break down the instrument. We also know that the instruments are increasingly difficult to clean when bioburden is allowed to dry on the interior components of more complex instruments, making it extremely challenging to remove. And therefore, the increased risk is for cross-contamination and for bioburden making it to the field, which also increases the risk of incidents of immediate use. That just spirals down into increased risk of infection.
So, Lisa, one of the things that you had presented at the conference recently was about a large project that you were involved in with your health system, and it was really focused on educating and standardizing policies and procedures regarding point of use. I think a lot of the attendees were also really impressed with the crosswalk that you had put together with all of the different industry recommendations and guidelines around point of use, and really the labor of love in showing how they relate specifically and how those practices can be implemented, because maybe the way it's worded from different regulatory bodies or recommending guidelines didn't quite line up, and you were able to bring that to a consensus. Is that correct? And maybe you could talk about how you went through that process.
We are the largest healthcare system in the state of Indiana, and we have a combined sterile processing leadership committee. Our system director of infection prevention is extremely involved, and also in the perioperative admin council and several other multidisciplinary groups. It was really her vision to evaluate point of use cleaning and start a work group to look at standards of work. And the reason was because she wanted to ensure that we eliminated the risk. She believed that point of use cleaning would get to the root cause of why there is higher risk for bioburden to make it to the field. I was asked to join the work group because I really enjoy research. For example, when I first got my hands on the latest ST-79 that was published last October, I spent quite a bit of time scouring through the document to make sure that I was on top of all of the changes that I could possibly be aware of. And when I was in one of our combined leadership meetings, I created a whole PowerPoint on the latest updates to the ST-79, and a lot of my peers had not had an opportunity to be as plugged in to what was going on in the industry as I had. To a lot of them, it was news that there was even a new document. I have become a resource to a lot of my peers. They trust that when I am going to present them with information, that I'm going to be giving them something that is current, relevant, and evidence-based. My system IP director had asked me to be involved in this project because she knew that I was going to deliver for her. And so we spent several months as a team digging in, going through all of these different publications. When we created the crosswalk, it was to verify what exactly are all of these different organizations saying. I think having that visual was really impactful, and I think that it kind of did bring home the whole point that even if these organizations are saying something a little bit differently, the overall theme is the same.
And Lisa, I know that coming from, you know, the SPD side of things, that one of the more difficult things that you can ask a CS leader to do is to have one of these conversations with the OR to kind of take the initiative to start this discussion about the point of use cleaning. You know, what are some strategies that you would suggest to CS leaders to be able to go to the OR and discuss these things with them?
I think it starts with first changing our mindset to know that point of use cleaning is more a conversation about universal precautions and the fact that infection prevention is everybody's responsibility and not just that it's somebody else's job. So I think that sterile processing managers can really begin that conversation by bringing their infection prevention team into awareness and bringing it together, a multidisciplinary team, to have those conversations, to get everybody to a common ground of this is what we want to accomplish. One of the things I had an opportunity to do was to write a position statement on point of use cleaning. And the reason that that came about was because when we were involved in the project, there was some change to the language from the accreditation bodies that, particularly the Joint Commission statements, that sounded like they relaxed some of their original expectations of what they would be scoring on. And immediately, once that information had started to come into awareness of these different circles, we started getting a little bit of pushback from the OR, mainly just as a system, how would this be feasible? We owe it to our patients. Patients come to hospitals because they expect that the care that they're going to be receiving is going to help them heal.
So Lisa, you know, one of the things that I was not surprised about in your comment, and I know you didn't quite say this, but you mentioned the Joint Commission came out with some new guidance or, you know, updated the way that they were scoring this topic. And wouldn't you know, the industry was a little confused, or maybe it didn't have the impact that the Joint Commission had anticipated. So instead of actually driving a safer practice, it was making this whole conversation in regards to point of use cleaning more complicated or harder maybe for sterile processing folks to get the type of compliance across the whole continuum of care. And again, you know, that's what this is all about, getting everyone on the team to pull the same direction to ensure that patients are safe from surgery to surgery to surgery. It's not a one-way flow and then we're done. It starts again. And where does it start? At the point of use. And so, again, you know, I know that the listeners, you know, might have heard that, oh, well, the Joint Commission came out with additional guidance, and the assumption would be that it was clarifying guidance or clarifying scoring, but oftentimes that's not the case. And it's not, I don't want to throw the Joint Commission under the bus for being the only one that has confusing instructions coming out there. We've made a reference to manufacturers also struggle in that area, and even our own guidelines and industry recommendations also have some conflicting guidance there as well. But that's why it comes back to having that collaborative mindset at the facility level, that we're going to work through those gray areas to come into an agreement that does not just benefit one team or the other. It's actually benefiting the patient. So I thought that you brought that up very well on that. And I wanted to follow up there. The purpose of this podcast always is giving our listeners a nugget to walk away with. It's not just to change minds, you know, but to change practice. And in your particular position, then, you have gotten to see this practice change. What are some of the strategies that you used and have used to maintain and hardwire this type of compliance when it comes to point of use cleaning?
We set up the guardrails of the minimal expectations of point of use cleanings. We had standards of work that showed pictures of what good looked like and showed how case carts should be loaded from the OR before the instruments are sent down to decontam. We had standards of work for a flow, each step that should be taken with the rationale. Then really, we had to just make it really simple and say, you know, if an accreditation body was going to stop evaluating or stop scoring on hand washing, it wouldn't mean that we would stop performing hand hygiene to the level that we do just because we weren't going to be scored. We looked at point of use cleaning as the same high standard, that we were going to deliver the best possible minimal standard on a consistent basis. And it took buy-in from the very, very top and the commitment to delivering the best possible care that we can to our patients. This is still very new. So as far as consistency goes, we're still working on that. But we've built the standards of practice so that consistency can be maintained.
Lisa, let's say hypothetically, I'm a scrub tech and you've made the argument about this higher standard of care that our patients deserve. And, you know, you've won me over. Now, some may be wondering, what is it specifically? What are the practices that I should be doing? Like, what specific work are we saying should be done at that point of use in the ORs?
Well, I think we're finding that there's still a lot of confusion about saline on the field and about sterile water even being on the field. And I think that scrub tech, they go to school knowing in surgical technology school, they are trained not to pass a dirty instrument to a surgeon. And so they already equipped with the knowledge of what they should be doing. And then when they get into the workforce, the culture isn't conducive for them to be able to perform. And so I think a lot of times they're challenged to fit in with that culture, or, you know, they have an ethical dilemma. The most common struggle that I hear for a reason not to be able to perform point of use cleaning is the struggle to turn over the rooms in a timely fashion. And I think that if the OR culture would really look at focusing their attention on different ways to be efficient, that point of use cleaning, it should be happening throughout the procedure, that there would be time to efficiently handle breaking down the field in an appropriate way to keep the instrument so that they're not loaded in a way that's going to damage them. Point of use is more than just cleaning. It's keeping the instruments separated so that delicate instruments are not underneath heavier instruments and so forth.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right when we talk about conflicting priorities, that, you know, one measure that the OR is consistently, you know, have their feet held to the fire on is that room turnover time. So the result of that is that, you know, they are in a hurry to break these rooms down. And this is when we see light cords being pulled out from the middle and the repair side of things. We see delicate stuff, like you said, with Bookwalter retractors stacked on top. And there's not a whole lot of thought often that's given to the repercussions of making such an emphasis on the timing of it. So like you said, I think that, this is a mind shift for the OR that this has to be included now as part of that strategy, that we expect things to be done quickly, but they also have to be done in a certain way as well. Is that correct and kind of the strategy that you're gunning for?
Yes. If you think about it, you know, sterile processing is a cost center, so we're not revenue producing. However, in the OR, there is that drive to turn over cases so that we can increase volume to sustain the hospital. And while all of that is understood and important, it's also important to note that it's a vicious cycle, because when instruments are not handled in a way that extends their useful life, that includes point of use cleaning, because when bioburden's left to dry, they can become impacted and not function appropriately. It might be several uses later when that item is serviced, then it's discovered that there was bioburden embedded inside of it. So the cost of repairs, the cost of replacing instruments that are damaged and broken, the cost of potential infection, all of these things eat away at the whole rationale for the rapid turnover. So I feel that if the emphasis could be somehow turned toward proactive measures that are efficient and cost effective, that the whole sense of urgency on the OR side to flip these rooms, to add another procedure, to bump another case. I guess my whole point is we're looking at the wrong things.
So Lisa, I did want to jump in here and follow up to your quick comment about that bioburden, especially the stuff that's getting impacted into instruments. And if you talk to any instrument repair technician on a truck, you know, they're going to tell you stories about instruments they have taken apart, and they have seen all this bioburden in there. So the question, you know, for a lot of folks in the industry is, if this has been in here through multiple patients, you know, where is this data that's tying back potential surgical site infections to multiple use of instruments? Like, we see it in scopes, but it's a lot easier to keep track of a, you know, $50,000 scope than it is to keep track of one Carison Rongeur. But there could still be potential. And I know there's a lot of work going on, and we've actually talked to a couple of folks on podcasts in previous seasons. We may talk to a couple of more, you know, who are trying to answer that instrument to patient tracking. But this conversation again is, even without knowing the numbers, we know that retained bioburden through multiple processing cycles is a problem, you know. So I thought that was a very important point that you made. And I did want to ask, before we transition into talking about an upcoming conference, that if you were to bring a particular guideline or industry standard into conversation with your OR team, what are the clearest standards out there, or guidelines, or are there particular articles or studies that you have found very persuasive to your peers in the OR to get this collaboration going?
The Association for Surgical Technologists has published a recent revision to their guidelines for breaking down the sterile field. And in that document, they have detailed what the surgical technologist should be doing, especially at the point of use. That position statement was very compelling as to what good looks like.
So, Lisa, one of the other reasons we wanted to bring you on the show is because you've done some amazing work with IU Health and Circle of Care to put on what I would consider to be an unprecedented seminar. It's coming up, I believe, February 23rd. I am very grateful that you asked me to bring my limited knowledge as compared to so many others in the industry to the table to speak at this event. I'm very excited to do that. And I know the lineup is really phenomenal. But more than anything, I thought maybe you could just at first talk about what does make this so unique. Not only the size of it being a non, I would say, ISHM annual seminar, you know, the capacity is phenomenal. But you've also got CMEs approved, and you've got a physician track and different tracks. And I think the biggest thing is that this is really meant to bring lots of cross-functional teams together and place an emphasis on sterile processing. As you mentioned, not a revenue generator, but so critical to patient care.
Yes. What makes Circle of Care so unique is that, first of all, we recognize that all of these different organizations exist for a very important reason. You have to have the expert knowledge. And so those niches are incredibly important. However, when those niche specialties exist in and of themselves alone in silos, then the ability for, I guess, the lack of communication, there are gaps for communication and opportunities are missed to be able to address issues that everybody deals with. We believe that by bringing all of the disciplines together at the same table of conversation, that it provides a platform to really do problem solving and create that influence.
You know, Lisa, you mentioned before about how the OR feels that pressure to turn the room over and, you know, being that revenue generator, they've got to hit those metrics, right? And everybody's in a different department. A lot of them are very siloed. But even if they were all together, just the pace of a day doesn't leave a lot of room for reflection and other perspectives being brought to the table, you know, where you can really dig in on it. And I think that's what the Circle of Care, obviously that's one of the missions of the organization, but definitely for this seminar, what's being accomplished is bringing all those people to an event where they gain each other's perspective. I know that there's going to be a lot of hands-on at the event as well. And I think it's in those moments, not necessarily just sitting and learning and from a presentation format and an audience, but then when they really start to engage each other, but not engage each other with a patient's life on the table, they have that opportunity to talk to each other and say, well, hold on, let's stop. Let's back it up. Can you show me what you were doing right then? Because you really aren't afforded those opportunities during a regular workday all the time.
That's right. And I had a really interesting conversation with one of our surgeons who said that as a surgeon, he ends up doing a lot of problem solving, but he doesn't understand all of the other implications when things break down. He wanted to understand the impact of all of the people involved, and he wanted to have a better visualization of like timelines, how things are reported when things go wrong. And he wanted to kind of wrap his mind around what's the big picture and how is everybody together as a perioperative group? How is everybody impacted when a problem arises? Because usually he said what he ends up doing is he's trying to solve a problem, but he has limited information on all of those other factors. So he's trying to use an approach that might not necessarily be the most current and best approach. So he was really intrigued by the idea of having a collaborative conversation on all of these diverse themes to kind of get his mind wrapped around the whole thing.
Yeah, and not even just limited information, but limited time to gather the information. And so that's what makes this so important as well, because you can step away and you can get a more complete picture. Everybody's just kind of under pressure. I think that's one of the things that makes it tough. And, you know, Peter Nichol, somebody who's been a guest on our show and is going to be coming up again in the future, but we had Peter obviously out to the Stanford seminar with us. He was a keynote speaker there. I think we're seeing a lot more physician interest in this area or surgeon interest in sterile processing, and probably for the reasons you just described. And, you know, I know you're going to have Peter at this event as well. And I think you have some other pretty big headlining, if not surgeons, you know, definitely doctors, you know, be it PhD or epidemiology. I think you have somebody from the CDC coming to speak.
Yes, we do. Dr. Benowitz. One of the reasons why we were so thrilled to have Dr. Benowitz on as a speaker is because he is investigating medical device pathology and bringing that level of intellect to this conversation is really going to take this to a whole other level.
Mentioned earlier, again, tying those links together of do medical devices cause these infections? And if so, how do we prove it? And when we're talking support, you know, some of the support, even if you have a collaborative team, we'll go back to equipment. Do the teams have the right transport containers? Do they have the right chemicals at the point of use? Do they have the right equipment for cleaning on through the process and inspection on the clean side? And again, when you start talking resources, that's what has to come back to this causal link. And yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic addition to an already diverse and innovative conference to say, well, let's look at these devices and see, you know, what studies and what research has been done to tie those together and, you know, how does that work? And I think Justin mentioned, you know, with Peter Nichol there, obviously, but you've also got a couple of other Beyond Clean alumni coming to take part as well. Brian Reed, I know, will be there, along with Bob Mars as well. And of course, with all the collaboration, you know, through the podcast, we're going to be supporting and promoting this conference through all of season three. I'm planning on being there as well. So at the very least, along with, you know, the 1,000+ other folks that you'll have there, we can have a little Beyond Clean reunion perhaps on the side one of the evenings there. You know, super excited about that. Was there anybody else that you wanted to mention just guest-wise?
Yes. Wava Truscott is going to be speaking, and we have an FDA liaison who has been on several AMI work groups related to sterile processing, and his name is Ramesh Panguluri. We have Tim Duggar. He is a career coach. He has 34 years of experience, and he is outstanding as a speaker, presenter, and has so much. He just loves working with people. So his topic is going to be on sustaining stable teams, employee retention, which is a huge issue in perioperative services. We have Sylvia Garcia-Huchins, the Director of Infection Prevention for Standards Interpretation of the Joint Commission. And we also have some breakout sessions that we're going to be doing, and Sean Flynn and Stephen Kovac and Mary Ann Drosnock will all be there as well.
Those are some good names from our show.
Yeah.
You have more names from our show than we can even remember to mention.
Yeah, we're so thrilled to have such a diverse group of passionate people. These people have invested a lot of their career into research and education and expertise, and to bring all of these people together. I'm so excited about the impact that it's going to have for the attendees, and how it will further the conversations that will ripple into the hospitals. I think the thing that I'm the most excited about is getting professionals engaged in taking action. You know, Justin, one of the things that we heard at the Lucille Packard event was that the seminar felt more like a call to action than just an educational experience. And that is what we really want this seminar to be, is to carry that message forward, that people will take back to their facilities and take ownership and make a real difference in their work environment and building those relationships, delivering the best possible outcome for their patients that they can.
Well, I'll tell you, it's definitely wide-reaching, because even as we record this several weeks before it will air, I know people that are out in the state of Pennsylvania where I live that want to make the trip for the event. And that speaks volumes, because you knew that you would be impacting your local region. But to know already that there are people that want to be coming from states away, or really speaks to what a great lineup you've put together and what a lot of thought has gone into it. I think the last thing we want to tell everybody is just how to register. So can you throw out information on where they can go to register for this event before it gets sold out? I know you've got a large capacity, but I have a lot of faith in this event not having seats available with several weeks to go.
Yes, registration is on the Indiana University School of Medicine Office of Continuing Medical Education website, and you can get there through the Circle of Cares event page at cocteam.org. We are using the Whova app for our event. You can download the app and pick your scheduled track. You can choose which presenters you want to go to for the concurrent session, and you can see up-to-date events. You can network with other attendees and see all the bios of the speakers and the topics. There's hotels in walking distance. We have $5 vouchers for all-day parking in garages. It's at the NCAA Hall of Champions Conference Center, which is a huge venue in downtown Indianapolis.
Lisa, I'm really looking forward to seeing you again out there. And I know we had a great time out on the West Coast, despite all of the unfortunate fires that were going on while we were there. You know, obviously, difficult impact on everybody out in the Bay Area and up and down the whole West Coast. But I'm looking forward to seeing you. Had a great time. And we're kind of getting the band back together from that event. Only, obviously, Hank's going to join us. And we've got some other past guests that didn't get to join us out at Stanford that will be involved in this as well. So hopefully we'll save some time for dinner and networking ourselves, you know, away from a very big and busy event.
We definitely will. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to it. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll definitely be talking again soon.
Thanks a lot, guys.
That was Lisa Wakeman, Sterile Processing Education and Quality Coordinator for the Indianapolis Suburban Region of IU Health Network. We talked about point of use, Mike. I think this one, really one of the hottest topics in the industry. It actually also happens to be the topic I'll be speaking on at the IU Health and Circle of Care Conference coming up in February. And lots of, I think one thing I'm not sure that we talked about, but the Joint Commission, I know that they've put out numerous different updates, but they seem to be at one point this year placing an enormous amount of emphasis on point of use cleaning so much that they were going to be driven in ORs to comply or potentially, you know, get cited for not doing so. And I know they may have softened that somewhat, but I love what Lisa said about, you know what, there's a minimum standard and that this is really about universal precautions. Point of use cleaning isn't about whether or not you're going to get cited on your next Joint Commission survey. It's all about doing the right thing for the patients. And, you know, I'll also echo what Hank said. Everybody knows that has ever worked in repair or been a repair technician or just, really reviewed that information or engaged with their repair technician, they know that there is bioburden hiding in these devices. And once it gets a chance to dry, it's a serious issue, and we really need those partners in the OR to help us out.
Yeah, Justin, like you said, this is probably the hottest topic in the industry right now. I know you and I both work on the education side of things, and we get requests on this particular topic all the time, especially lately. And it's not surprising that the Joint Commission in particular has really decided to emphasize this. I think an article that they had posted said that in 2017, 72% of hospitals that they survey failed in some way or another regarding the standard of care that point of use care is included under. So they kind of looked at that standard and said, wow, you know, there's a lot of people who are dropping the ball on this. So what do we really need to emphasize? And one of those points of emphasis was that point of use care. So I'm glad that they are taking it seriously. I can tell you from, you know, from a technician standpoint that pretty much every decontamination I've been in there's been problems with instruments coming down with dried blood hardened on them. It takes longer. In some cases, it may not really even be cleanable at all at that point. So this is a really significant patient safety issue. Along with that, I'm really, really excited for this conference that's going on with IU Health. That's going to be just a major, major event that I cannot wait to be a part of.
Yeah, Lisa and her team have done an amazing job putting this together. I really do think it's completely unprecedented. It's going to be a great time, and I would encourage, as I mentioned, I know people that are going to be traveling from out of state to Indiana to attend this, and I would encourage other Beyond Clean listeners to do the same. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes or Stitcher, and now also on Google Play and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.